Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Lakers Collective. LeBron James is gone. LeBron has made it known that he will be leaving the Los Angeles Lakers. What does all that mean? Free agency now officially just hours away. Where do the Lakers go from here? We have a lot to talk about on today's show. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha and Pete Zayas. I guess our first order of business officially. Welcome, Pete, joining the show as a permanent member of the team.
It's an honor, guys. Thank you so much for having me. It's kind of a strange first day of work under the circumstances. Just want to send my best regards to Jason. And thank you for letting me fill this chair. He's one of my best friends in this business. And just, all three of you guys produce so much content. I'm a YouTube guy in terms of, like, before anything else, I'm a Laker fan before I'm an analyst. And I want to have stuff to listen to and watch as well. And just, I know that whenever I log into YouTube, you, Jason, Jovan, all three of you guys are going to have quality content. And just really grateful to as a fan, and can't wait to join you guys and see what we can build here.
Yeah, we're super happy to have you, and can't wait to get to dive into everything with you, Pete, and have always respected your work. And we're it's certainly, Jovan, you and I were talking about it the other day, it's bittersweet certainly to have Jason move on. Obviously the health reasons, totally understanding, and glad he's doing what he needs to do for himself, but at the same time, very, very excited to have Pete here.
Couldn't agree more. It's bittersweet losing Jason, but very excited to have Pete here. And I don't think I've ever told you this, but when I first joined the beat, the first thing I did was try to consume as much Lakers content as I could to just, inundate myself with as much Lakers and just make sure I knew what I was talking about. Because switching beats, it can be a heavy thing. And Laker Film Room just became a daily, must listen for me. And it has been, since then. So it's one of the few pods that I see a new episode, I have to listen to it. So, I'm really excited to have you on.
I'm honored.
100%. So free agency kicks off in a few hours here, but we just made our big free agent addition here. We are already landing Pete Zayas. So we're already ahead of the game here. But let's not delay it too much longer. LeBron James told the Lakers that he will not be returning. He is going to play next season. Where is he going to play? We don't know. Maybe it's going to be Golden State. Maybe it's going to be Cleveland. Maybe it's going to be Miami. Who knows where he'll ultimately wind up. Jovan, what was your first reaction when you saw the news that LeBron was leaving?
I was a bit surprised. I think it was one of those situations where you just had to see it to believe it. Like I'd been talking about it on my show where every show I'm getting asked the updated, what's the percentage LeBron stays? And I think a week ago I'd said like 57-43 to get very specific. Then yesterday I got asked and I said, I think it's like 50.5 to 49.5. I think it's basically a coin flip at this point, but I'm still on the side of them figuring something out here and that being the slightly more likely outcome. But clearly he was ready to move on. And I think there's a lot to unpack here that we could have a whole 1 hour discussion about why he's moving on. I think at the core of it, this had become a marriage of convenience, in my opinion. It had frankly been a marriage of convenience for a couple years at least. I will contend that things were never the same between the two sides post Russell Westbrook trade and the fallout of that. I think the Lakers as a franchise have not really been the same since then in terms of they've been chasing their own tail, trying to regain the assets and get out of that hole. I don't think they've fully gotten out of the Westbrook hole yet. So that mixed with the Luka trade and shifting into a new direction. And then last summer you have the statement that comes out and neither side is looking at potential extension. And it just felt like obviously the writing was on the wall to a degree in terms of LeBron was either going to play like one more year or not. And it was just a matter of whether it was in LA, but it did feel like there had been some signs, especially the last year or so, that they were just moving in a new direction on both sides. And I think this can be a win-win for both. I think for LeBron, he gets to restart somewhere and dictate the final chapter of his career and maybe feel a little bit more respected and validated. And for the Lakers, there's now clarity. I think you definitely could be taking a step back and as of right now have taken a step back, but there's clarity in terms of you're moving forward with the Luka era. There's no tension as to like whose team is this or what's the hierarchy. It's clearly Luka's team. and now you have to build the proper roster. So that's my like 2 minute take on this whole situation.
Pete, how about you? What did you think when this came out? And Jovan mentioned that you've got LeBron maybe could get to a place where he was more respected. Do you think the Lakers were disrespectful to LeBron?
I don't think it was disrespectful.
That's a little disrespectful.
Yeah, it's
or not. Well, how 100% do you break respect?
How yeah. do you break up with LeBron James? Like, if you decide, hey, we want to build a team around Luka, and we don't feel like we can build a championship team around Luka with LeBron still. Like, we can't start the Luka era with LeBron still here. Now, that might be wrong, right? But like, is there a delicate way of doing that? Is there a way to do that? Like, frankly, you know this, Jovan, like, this is an outcome I've expected for quite some time, that they'd be moving on from LeBron. They'd been circling this offseason. Ramona Shelburne had reported that they'd presented to Luka this last offseason that their plans for the summer of 26 and LeBron wasn't in them. To my understanding, that's accurate. And so they have their chance to do that. But Trevor, there's a lot of hubris in the idea that we are going to move on from LeBron James, and now we're going to build the team of Luka's dreams around him. Like, how the heck does this team get better while losing LeBron?
That's really the question, right? Because I do think there is a path. I think there is a path to get better losing LeBron James. It's just a narrow path. And that would not have been true a few years ago. A few years ago, it would be, no, you automatically get worse when you lose LeBron James. And that still is probably true. I mean, LeBron James is famous for being good at basketball. So you lose him and you're probably going to get worse when you are, in fact, a basketball team. But it's high level analysis right there. But I do think that the path to getting better without LeBron James is leaning into specific players that are going to fit around Luka and Austin. And that's difficult to land those types of players. The guys that are the uber athlete, super switchy, high motor, can still shoot the ball while having some guys who can make decisions out there that could pass, dribble, shoot. This vision for what the team's going to be. The types of players that you need to do that, unfortunately, are also the types of players that every other team in the NBA is targeting. But there is a world where the team can get better without LeBron James. It's just a very difficult path. And I think what this is going to do, losing LeBron, is it now puts a lot of pressure on Rob Pelinka to assemble this roster. Now we find out. This is not a surprise. This is not something they didn't know or weren't aware could happen. We've known this for quite a while, that LeBron James and the Lakers could be parting ways this summer. Now we find out what kind of a plan Rob Pelinka has in place. What's the fallback? He had a great backup plan when Kawhi Leonard made a mistake and said no and chose the Clippers over the Lakers. And that fallback plan helped bring in a championship. What is the fallback plan now for the Lakers? And Jovan, what I see a lot of from Lakers fans is LeBron left. I'm sad. I'm happy. Whatever the emotion is. But the biggest thing is I don't trust that the Lakers are going to be able to respond to this based on what we've seen from their front office. Where do you stand on that? What kind of pressure is put on the front office now?
I wholly understand, if not agree with that sentiment, because they have not built a competent rotation, I would argue, in 5 years. I think this has been an ongoing thing where they do a lot of patchwork, and it's a lot of... my thing that I have been very adamant about the last couple of summers, and I guess it depends how this summer plays out, if I was right or wrong, but my thing has been, I think you need to build the roster you want in the summer, and then you tweak it during the season. If there's injuries, if there's fits concerns, if there are certain weaknesses that are just glaring to the point of you can't win a championship with this weakness, then the trade deadline is for addressing those. But I felt like the Lakers have put together these half-baked rosters over the last few years that are good, are high 40s, low 50s-ish win teams, but, and maybe you could talk yourself into them being like a puncher's chance contender, but realistically, we're probably going to lose in round one or round two. And then the goal is, well, let's try to find this magical deal once the prices come down at the deadline. And they've had some hits. The DFS trade was great. The Luka trade, obviously, I don't even like classify it in this type of move. That was a franchise-altering, no-brainer decision. And then even the Gabe Vincent second-round swap for Luke Kennard, that was a nice upgrade for them that really helped them down the stretch of the second half of the season. But like, putting Luka to the side, the DFS and Luke trades were nice, but they weren't those are more bench level guys. They weren't like dramatically changing. I mean, they changed it because the Lakers had such limited depth and such limited one way players, but was it like this crazy all in where we're putting a first or two on the table? We're really adding a long-term piece. So I think they have been building toward this offseason, and now there's a ton of pressure to nail it, because to me, I think they could walk out of the next few hours, Walker Kessler, Jalen Duren, Peyton Watson, you sign the offer sheet or you do a sign and trade. Okay, cool. That's one player. You still need two other starters and you need two to three other high level bench players. So if 80% of your cap is going to one of those dudes, what are you doing with the other 20%? And what are you doing with your room exception? What are you doing with your minimums? And are you building a coherent roster, a coherent vision here? Because that's my biggest fear. I have relative confidence in them landing a name. I think they're going to win the press conference. They're going to get the headliner. Can they build a starting group? Can they build a rotation that makes sense and can compete with OKC and San Antonio? That's an open-ended question that, frankly, right now I have some real doubts about based on the last 5 years.
Rob Pelinka is going to own this offseason in a way that he's never owned any of the other ones. Like, Lakers have, post Magic, have had a very collaborative approach in terms of, okay, I'm going to get on the same page with my star. I'm going to get on the same page with my coach. And all together, we're going to agree on a certain outcome. And if you look at that from a Rob Pelinka trying to keep his job perspective, that's actually really good, right? Because you can, even if you mess up, it's like, well, hey, we agreed to this. We all kind of came to this conclusion. And now this is like, if you go the route of expecting to lose LeBron James on purpose and then still promising your current superstar that we're going to be the best team that we can be and we're going to build something around you, it's all on him now in ways that it really hasn't been in any other offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get a sense for what Rob Pelinka, what his vision is, what does he think about that? You know, that's been the one thing that's been a little bit murky, and maybe some of that has been, I just disagree with what the vision is when we talk about small combo guards and their reliance on players like that. But I do want to get a real sense of what is the plan? What is the basketball? What does Rob Pelinka believe about basketball in terms of actually creating a winning team? Real quick, everybody, if you haven't done so yet, double check for me if you're watching our show right now. Double check if you are subscribed or not to the channel. If you're not, please make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. Apple Podcast, Spotify listeners, please make sure you guys do follow there. Give us that 5-star rating and review. We're happy to have you all in here. Obviously, a lot of stuff to talk about. So I guess this kind of leads us into a conversation about these meetings that the Lakers reportedly have planned with Jalen Duren, with Walker Kessler. Those can be happening today, 3 p.m. Pacific time is when you're officially allowed to meet. It sounds like, well, technically you're not allowed to meet yet. Tampering happens in the NBA. Marcus Smart sounds like he's already gone. In fact, we already have contract details with the Houston Rockets and what that's ultimately going to look like. This Lakers roster is looking pretty thin. Jovan, what is the pitch to Walker Kessler, to Jalen Duren, and do they really want to go down this treacherous path of restricted free agency, or should we be preparing for some type of sign and trade activity here?
I think it's a multi-pronged pitch. First and foremost, money talks, and we're willing to pay you more than anyone else. We're willing to pay you more than your incumbent teams. Jalen Duren, you feel disrespected by the Pistons and their offer. Here's X amount of money. Walker Kessler, you felt disrespected by the $28 million AAV. Here's $35 million or whatever it ends up being. So I think the Lakers, with their cap space, can make a compelling offer with the finances. If you're a center, I think there is something special to playing in Los Angeles, playing as a Laker, and following in the footsteps of George Mikan and Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem and Shaq and Pau and AD and just that lineage of all-time great big men who are all Lakers. That is special. And it's a lot of pressure. And, you know, being the starting center for the Lakers, we saw, you know, DeAndre Ayton deal with that. Like, it's a lot. And there's a spotlight that comes with that, that if you are built for the pressure, that could be enticing for you. And I think there's just the general, like, playing for the Lakers, playing in LA, 80% of NBA players have either an offseason home or apartment in LA. most of the NBA lives in LA in the offseason at some point. So I think LA is obviously one of the most attractive destinations in the NBA, just period. But also playing for the Lakers, the prestige of that, I think that's an attractive thing that for a guy like Walker Kessler, who's toiled away in Utah for 4 years and been on these tanking teams, like going to the Lakers, I think would be a real step up for him. Just not like forget like the endorsements or spotlight of it, but just like people realizing how good Walker Kessler is. And then for Jalen Duren, you know, I think it could be a chance to have something special with Luka. And there's also some similarities between Luka and Cade in terms of how he could function offensively. So I think those are the two pitches. Obviously, Peyton Watson, LA guy, played at UCLA, grew up a Lakers fan. I think that one's a little bit of an easier sell. You know, come be the wing of the future next to Luka and Austin. So I think they have a really strong pitch for any of those three. I think it starts with the money, though. They're going to put on the table, like, we're paying you as much, if not more, than your incumbent teams are looking to pay you.
And none of those players or teams or the Lakers control the situation regarding those players. If the Lakers put that money out there, Utah can be like, fine. Detroit can be like, that's fine. Neither of them are pressed financially to not do that. And then the timing concerns me. Like, the last restricted free agent to change teams via offer sheet was Bogdan Bogdanovic in November of 2020. It's been 6 years since a player left their team without it being a sign and trade. So, Trevor, to your question, I do think that sign and trade is a good deal likelier, but also think of the timing of that. It's not actually free agency that opens right now. There's a moratorium. So they can, you can negotiate with these players and they can have these meetings with them and whatnot. But you, for example, Utah would have up to July 7th at 11:59 PM to match an offer sheet to Kessler. If they do, and all signs, I think, point toward them wanting to do, to retain him ideally. But if they do that, that free agency is over by then, guys. Like, the vast majority of what happens in free agency has already happened. And so that's part of my concern is, like, the main guys that they seem to be in on, Trevor, we won't even know until, like, July 8th, basically.
And that's the scary part, is because when we talk about, okay, what are the fallback plans? We've already seen some of those fallbacks come off the board. Rob Williams agreed to a new deal with the Blazers. This is arguably the worst time to be in the market for a center in the last 10 years plus, given the lack of options out there and the increased demand at the position. So I do think that if you're looking at the Lakers, if it's you're all in on Walker Kessler or Jalen Duren, you don't get one of those guys, what are the fallbacks? And I guess it's Mitch Robinson. It's guys that kind of are on that line of being between a starter and a backup, and are probably more on the backup side of that. There's some real concern, and that's where I need to see what is this? What is the plan now? Again, you knew that this was a possibility, a very real possibility, that you were going to be moving into a post-LeBron world. I don't think there's any way that whenever the dust settles from all of this, you can go to Luka and you can say, hey, Luka, it's okay. LeBron left, but it's okay. We got Mitch Robinson as our starting center, and Zaire Williams is going to be out there with you on the way. No, that is not going to get it done. That's not going to cause Luka to say, yes, I'm so happy I'm a Laker right now. Nothing against those players. Those are fine rotation players, but they got to go find quality pieces. They've got to find starting level players, and they only have a certain amount of assets to do it. So Rob Pelinka is going to be really put to the test here in order to get that done. All right, obviously we've got a lot more to talk about on this, but first let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. I made a few picks. The World Cup has been an absolute blast. I'm going to say Kylian Mbappe and Leo Messi both score a goal. Leo Messi just scoring goals left and right, so I'm going with that. Play $5, get $50 instantly in your lineups when you use that code HMA, and the link is in the description down below. Go check them out. All right, Jovan, you got something you want to hit us with?
I do. So I agree that the most likely scenario here is a sign and trade for Duren or Kessler. I think Watson's a little trickier because that's dealing with an interconference rival. And if I'm Denver, I'm just like, I'm not facilitating Peyton Watson going to the Lakers. I would rather just, like, I mean, I'll just match whatever contract he signs. I'm not like, it's a non-starter for me if I'm Denver, you know, personally, but you know, maybe they view it differently. I would do whatever it takes to get off of either Christian Brown or Cam Johnson and retain Peyton Watson. I thought he was their fourth best player pretty clearly last season, and at times even their third best player. So that's a priority if I'm Denver. But for argument's sake, let's just say Utah or Detroit is reluctantly open to the possibility of a sign and trade, but it is going to cost you two firsts. And Utah and Detroit both are talking to the Lakers. They're negotiating, and they say, you know, whatever contract you sign either one of these guys to, we're going to match it. The exception here, you send us two first round picks, the player is yours. And maybe you get it at like a slight discount. You don't have to go all the way up to the max, or like all the way, maybe in Kessler's case, like high 30s. If you could get them at like a reasonable number, but it is going to cost two first round picks and a sign and trade, where are you guys at with that? I think a first round pick I'm definitely cool with. It might just be the cost of doing business and guaranteeing it. Because the key here is with a sign and trade, you could lock that in today, and you know, technically it won't go through until the moratorium ends, but you don't have the uncertainty. If you just do the offer sheet, you are now, to Pete's point, locked into the situation of if you go to July 8th and you lose the player, you're done. You're screwed. It's over. It's a bunch of minimum guys and maybe like a restricted free agent who's having a holdout with their team. Maybe you can poach that guy, but that's probably not a guy that is definitely not going to be a guy on Kessler or Durant's level. So if it comes down to like with the context of LA's put a ton of pressure on this summer, they have the looming Luka situation if they botch this year and what he's going to want next summer. You just lost LeBron. If it comes down to like an all-in situation where you have to go high price in terms of finances plus potentially two first-round picks for Dern or Kessler to guarantee the sign and trade, would you go that high? Like how would each of you feel about that?
I'd do one. I wouldn't do like both. Because we got other things to shop for. It's like our mom sent us to the grocery store with $100 to make a nice meal for eight, you know, and we spent $80 on the cut of meat. And it's like, what are we going to do with the other $20? You know, like to me, Trevor, we've got too many holes in other places to like, of course we need to get that big. And the answer to this is somewhat buoyed against, well, what's our backup plan if we don't?
I guess if the backup's Mitch Robinson or Mamu starting, I think your first round exit.
Like I personally, I don't even think Mitch Robinson is better than DA. And this is not an advocacy for, I'd be very upset if DA is our starting center next year, but DA at $8 million, which is versus Mitch Robinson at 15, no, that's not an acceptable outcome. So I know that's between a rock and a hard place, but even still, like, I think you leave yourself in a spot where you have what, one tradable first next year. If you do that, like, do we even have any tradable first after that? How the heck do we build a team if this guy's going to make $35 million, cost two of our first round picks, and now we've got three dudes on the team? Like, I don't know, Trev.
Yeah, that's a really tough spot to be in. And as Bobby Marks is tweeting about right now, the center market has shrunk considerably. This is an awful time to be trying to find a big out there on the market. It really makes you regret that they didn't prioritize that position previously, prior to this, when you could have, I think, had a much easier time going and landing somebody. But I think the problem is, if you're going to do this, if you're going to go give up both those first, and essentially you're saying you're all in, okay, great, you got Luka, Austin, and let's say it's Walker Kessler, and then what? And what else are you adding to your team? Like, fingers crossed, hope Adu Thero or Cameron Carr hits and becomes that guy and is ready to go right away. No, you've got to be ready to make more depth moves on this team. We've been talking about that. Depth is not a luxury, but a necessity in today's NBA. And so going into a season where you have Luka, Austin, a big and nothing else, or a wing in Peyton Watson and nothing else around them, does not seem like a wise move. I mean, the situation that you presented, Jovan, with Mamukelashvili, who I like just fine, like DA is probably starting over him. Like, I don't think DA is coming off the bench there. You need to get
he starter. Can't be your defensive anchor as a like absolutely. he to me is a nice contrast to Jackson as a backup. I think I if they go the three-headed center rotation, I like Mamu or some sort of stretch five as even Mitch Robinson does. I guess if he's a backup, does contrast Jackson to a degree, but I guess the tricky part for me here is I almost feel like it's like if you don't spend and get the thing, you just don't have the ceiling. And if it is, yeah, if you go into next season with Mitch Robinson, John Collins, and Kelly Oubre with Austin and Luka, I just maybe that's a better fitting group around, but like you don't have the top end talent, and those three guys would all be coming off the bench for OKC in San Antonio. I don't see any of those guys starting for either one of those teams. You know, maybe John Collins at the four if they want to go a little bit bigger, but it's like, so you have three bench guys who'd be coming off the bench for those two teams, and you're going into that fight very shorthanded. Like I just think at that point, you're the fifth or sixth best team in the West.
Here's what I want to see. If they do negotiate, try to negotiate a sign and trade, I think it's two very different contracts, or they need to be different contracts to what you're actually presenting to that free agent. For example, if I'm going to give Walker Kessler a contract that is designed to get the Utah Jazz not to match it, that should be a different contract than the contract I'm giving to Walker Kessler if I'm negotiating a sign and trade with the Utah Jazz. If I'm trying to go all in so that the Utah Jazz don't match and I've got first round picks, I'm putting in a player option, I'm putting in most of the money, whatever it is that the league allows, 80% is due before the league year starts or whatever that number, I forget what it is off the top of my head, comes out to be. I'm doing everything I can to make it as thorny as possible for the Utah Jazz to match that. If it's a sign and trade scenario, though, I'm trying to make that contract significantly more team friendly while obviously still being acceptable to the player. But I want to try to build in a bit more flexibility on the contract side if I'm going to give up some of my roster building tools in terms of draft capital and flexibility, if that's the path I'm going to go down.
Yep. Amen.
I agree.
Okay, we've got a lot here in our chat as well. So let me throw to a few different questions here, because I think that's going to pinball us into a few different topics as we go through this. Tyler said, I feel confident we'll get someone good. Mark Walter isn't going to mess around. I feel very, very confident we will all be happy. So I think that, to me, Pete, initially makes me think, well, we're either going to be happy and Mark Walter is going to be happy, or Rob Pelinka's seat is going to get very hot. Like, Rob Pelinka is either going to be successful this offseason, or somebody else is probably making those decisions sooner rather than later.
Absolutely agree with this. That's the point I was making earlier about he really owns this offseason in a way that he hasn't before. And to make an optimist's argument, Trevor, you brought up earlier the backup plan to Kawhi, right? Where they immediately pivot to a team that works really well together and they win the NBA championship. Remember when Magic was the GM, and one of the things he commented about working with Pelinka, because remember, they kind of came from different worlds and Pelinka was Kobe's guy and they didn't know each other super well. And he was sort of remarking, like, I tell him I want to do this thing and he comes back to me with this whole Cheesecake Factory menu of options that, well, we could do this or we could do that. So if you give, and then even last offseason, right, we were expecting DFS to be back, and what they were able to split basically an MLE into two guys who were starters for us in DA and Marcus, and then Jake, while losing DFS and Goodwin, right? And so it hurts to lose Goodwin, but they were pretty efficient with that money. So if you give, like, Jovan, I view these guys as planners. Like, that's very much Pelinka's strength, is that he is able to plan something in advance and then give a whole bunch of different options on how to get there. They've had a year to do this, man. If they can't hit on this, like, it absolutely needs to be a very hot seat for him.
Agreed. I mean, I think I would go to an earlier point I made, that I think they're going to get someone that we feel good about, that the fan base feels good about. Like, if they get if they pull off the sign and trade for Kessler or for Watson, or they trade for a Jalen Suggs or a Herb Jones, or they pry Tari Eason, that might be a more realistic RFA that they could potentially get without having to do a sign and trade if it's at a certain number. I think they'll get someone that we feel good about. I think my concern has been, I have felt there's been a lack of vision, a lack of basketball identity with the last few rosters. And it's just this hodgepodge of, you know, almost talent grabs at times of, like, who is the best player for this price, but it doesn't necessarily make the most sense with the roster. Right. And it is a lot of former lottery picks, guys with a certain pedigree or name, at the cost of maybe, like, I think they often have been, oh, is this guy a former lottery pick that has some untapped potential? I'll take this guy over the G League two-way guy who, you know, started to, you know, pop a little bit, but that's not really a name. It's not going to be something like, so that's been my thing with this is, again, I think they could land a name, maybe even they land a couple names, and we feel good about the direction of the starting group. But it's been a while since they've built, in my opinion, a competent and deep bench. And that is the challenge here, is it's not just you spend the cap space on the guys you spend it on and you get the two or three guys that you're going to get with the cap space. Now, what do you use the room exception on? Now, what do you use the two to three minimum guys on? That, to me, is the question here of, because even the Mamu thing, that's interesting, but that's probably going to be the room exception. And now you're losing Luke and you already lost Marcus. And, like, that's a pretty, you know, those are some losses to the rotation. So I feel I agree with the statement to a degree. I just do have some concerns still with like how they fill out the actual starting group and how they fill out the bench.
To me, the sign that they're continuing along the same path they've been down over the last few years would be like a Norman Powell signing or a or Anthony Simon signing, who are fine players, but not the style of player that we really want to see joining the Lakers in terms of the, what they need skill set wise. That to me would be a clear sign that they're still just going for value. And I think they have to be laser focused on specific skill sets. They're difficult skill sets to find, but these guys that if the best thing you do is put the ball in the basket, that's probably not the kind of player the Lakers should be targeting, but it's the kind of guy they have targeted in the past. And we need to see a shift. This is part of the, you know, the Mark Walter, the Dodgerification process, the building in, bringing in more smart basketball minds. That's where I want to see the Lakers thinking, their decision-making, the moves that they make ultimately evolve here. But I'll tell you guys this, just to throw this out there, because I think it's something that's important that we recognize when we think about our expectations coming into the summer. What we're talking about right now in terms of the amount of flexibility the Lakers actually have, even with $50-ish million in cap space, even with a couple of picks, a room exception, all of that. We're probably talking about an offseason where Lakers fans are going to look at this roster and they're going to say, even if everything goes well, they're going to be able to say that's not as good as OKC, that's not as good as San Antonio. Part of hitting with this roster will have to be getting some guys that are able to step in next season and surprise us and be a little bit better than we expected and find a way for JJ Redick to make them better than the sum of their parts. So I think that there's a high probability that when Lakers fans are looking at the way this roster has come together, when the dust all settles, it'll be a little bit underwhelming, even if they do get that one guy, especially if they're looking at it from a depth perspective. And the Lakers are going to be somewhat reliant upon getting somebody that winds up being, or getting multiple players that wind up being able to play in a bigger role than the way we previously saw them.
This is how teams win championships, Trevor, is they get guys who outperform their contracts. And on some level, the max contract on Luka, like he's even better than the amount of money that he makes. But if you look at the Knicks, for example, you know, Brunson taking the $37 million that he made this past year, Shamet hitting on a vet minimum contract, you absolutely got a hit on those type of guys. And I'd add the development of guys like Adu and Carr is going to be essential to part of this, even if Jovan, if it just eats innings over the course of the regular season.
Yeah, I like that. I think the one thing that this all leads me to is, in my opinion, there should be more pressure now on getting off of the Vando contract, because I think if you were going the cap space route and the non-LeBron route and you're not getting LeBron on a discount, right? And maybe there, like, there theoretically could have been a scenario where you build the roster or, you know, most of the roster, you come to LeBron and you're like, hey, you're the missing piece here at like this much lower figure. We would love to have you back. Do you want to play on this team? That's out the window now. So if you are going this cap space route, I think every dollar does matter now. And it is a situation where getting off of ideally Vando and Dalton, because those are two guys that clearly are just on the outskirts of JJ's view of the rotation and what type of basketball he wants to play. If you can dump those guys somewhere, which I think will require draft capital, that then gives you more flexibility to build out this roster here. So instead of $50 million plus the 9.4 exception plus a couple of minimums, that could be upwards of 65-ish or so, you know, low to mid 60s million plus the room exception and minimums. And maybe if you could get off DA too, and I think it's gonna be tough to get off all three. So, but I would say Vando is the priority, especially with it being a multi-year deal. But if you could get off some additional money, even if it's maybe just DA and DK, you can't get off Vando. I would like to see an additional like $10 million added to their cap space, where they have more room to play with and it elevates the type of offers they can make. Because I think right now, especially if they do go the RFA route, the cap space dries up very quickly, and you might not even be able to add one of those guys and like keep Rui, and not even going into whether they should keep Rui or not, but just like that general slot of like a 15 to 17-ish million dollar player, you might not even have that remaining in your cap space. So I think it's imperative now that they move forward, and if they are going the cap space route, no LeBron, okay, you got to shed some more money, because I think if they don't, I don't know that they have enough to do all of the things that they need to do.
Yeah. Now, and as said notes here, the at least we're clear on the timeline to focus on. Yeah, we're at the Lakers now. Now we have that focus. We know exactly what they're up against and what they, it is that they need ultimately to do here. Not fully aware. This Miguel Zambrano said, not fully aware of the Miami cap situation, but if a sign and trade is the route with LeBron, I wouldn't mind Wiggins, Mitchell second for LeBron, Dalton connect. I've seen a lot of this, and this has been going on across social media. People have been saying, well, why would, you know, the LeBron stance, why would LeBron ever help the Lakers? You know, all that kind of stuff. No, the Lakers would be helping LeBron. Yes. This would be about getting LeBron more money from a team that can't give him that money. From a Lakers perspective, yes, it would be great to be able to get usable players in like an Andrew Wiggins or a Jared Allen or whoever in exchange for LeBron James, rather than just lose him for nothing, essentially for just having a little bit more cap space. I don't know that that's the route this goes, especially if LeBron is truly prioritizing happiness over anything else, over money. Who knows? Maybe that means he'll take a veteran minimum, and then there's nothing the Lakers can do no matter what. I do think a sign and trade could wind up being an ideal scenario, but you got to be getting back pieces that the Lakers would actually want.
Yep.
For what it's worth, I guess the appeal here, if you're Miami, is just like getting LeBron compared to potentially not getting him. But these are two of Miami's like four pencil in starters right now. And this is a group that barely has a bench. So of course, like in a vacuum, Wiggins, Mitchell, second for LeBron. Okay, I get it. But from a Miami perspective, I'd rather just be like, LeBron, here's a non-taxpayer MLE. And if he isn't willing to take that, you then have Bam, Giannis, LeBron, and basically nothing else. And not much flexibility to build out the roster. So that would be a pretty compromised position for Miami.
LeBron starting at the three is a bit awkward too.
Mm-hmm.
And Wiggins, I guess you could rework the Wiggins situation into, because he's not trade eligible immediately. I'm not sure on the sign or the extension. I thought players who are extended can't be traded immediately.
I don't know.
It depends on the size of the extension.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Because it is a decrease for him. But 3-year deal, I don't know.
Pretty sure there's something with the size of the extension that matters. I'd have to go dig back in and I don't know. My brain is a little bit mush when it comes to all of that stuff.
It's been a warning.
Isn't that Pete from Laker Film Room?
Yes, indeed. That's me. Nice to meet you.
That's him. 30% sad, 70% excited, 100% grateful for all 8 years. Yeah. What? I guess Pete, we'll start. Let's go with you. What do you think about what the 8 years of LeBron in LA has meant and maybe should mean to Lakers fans?
You know, I'm an old Kobe guy, and I've been arguing with people on the internet for 25 years now. And so he was initially a villain, right? Like, sure. I remember hearing Vince Carter's better than Kobe, Tracy McGrady's better than Kobe. And then this young kid in Cleveland comes along and they're telling me he's better than Kobe, or, oh, what the hell? I don't want to hear any of that. And to go from that to being like, I'm legit sad about this, you know, like, and I worked for the team between 2020 and 2024 in their social media department. And it's not that big of a place. You run into LeBron from time to time, which, by the way, is quite an experience to turn a corner and be like, oh, yeah, LeBron right there. But one thing that I always say when this topic comes up is there are two things. Just his love of basketball that's independent of any of the outside stuff. Like, his relationship with the game is really cool to see. Like, he genuinely loves it. And he's really good to people. Like, you know, he's good to the CEO all the way down to the janitor, you know. And, like, the way he treats people. And when you're a guy like LeBron James, just something as small as a fist bump, Jovan, can mean a lot to people. That he just goes out of his way to be kind and decent to people in ways that, like, seeing that firsthand up close when there's no cameras around and there's nobody like that, I will always have a level of respect for him as a person. And then he stabilized the franchise, I'd argue twice, between when he came here initially in 2019, and then in the aftermath of the Westbrook trade and that summer and all of that. Like, they really pulled it out of the mud to be that high 40s, low 50s win team that we were lamenting a little bit earlier, but it sure as hell is a better place than we were after that summer of 22. And he did a lot of the work to help us get there. So I'm full of gratitude, like the 100% grateful that LSX says, like, absolutely. I'm in that same spot.
Agreed.
By the way, just real quick, sorry, Jovan. LeBron did just tweet Quote tweeted the Lakers, thank you, LeBron post said, no, thank you. Truly an honor to wear the purple and gold while trying to continue the greatness and legacies that came before me. Hope I made a few proud during my stint.
Hell yeah.
I think he did. Yeah, it was interesting for me because I grew up a Lakers fan, but I also grew up a LeBron fan. I'm pretty sure that Venn diagram was pretty small. So when he came to the Lakers, I was already into my professional career and had killed my fandom. So, but it was, I was like, you know, the little kid in me who liked both the Lakers and LeBron, like this, it was a cool moment for him. But then getting to cover him the last almost 7 years was just awesome. And it was unlike anything I had ever experienced in my, like I was there for parts of the tail end of Kobe. And I think now with the media stuff, like there is more media at games than there used to be. So it does sometimes feel like more of an event than it did even like earlier in my career, just in terms of the overall coverage. But just covering LeBron, like I quickly learned like every little thing he does, every tweet, every statement, even within a press conference, multiple quotes like immediately becomes news. So at The Athletic, I would say 90% of the newsers I wrote, if not more, were somewhat, you know, somewhat related to LeBron in some form or fashion. And so, but just seeing like just the experience of covering LeBron, of he's just different than any other star that I've covered. Like, and I've covered at this point, or at least been at a game where each star of the past 15 years has been at. And it's like, it's just, there's a different aura with LeBron, and there's a different, like, people are sort of, he's like the Pied Piper out there, where just wherever LeBron goes, there's this crowd that follows him, and like you see all the eyeballs, people stop mid conversation and just sort of like LeBron's walking by. And I just think that's at a different level than any other NBA player. So yeah, I mean, that experience was something that I'll never forget. And I saw it, especially on the road, like at home, it's, you're a little desensitized. You're expecting to see LeBron on the road, just the way that the road fans would interact with him and the crowds and stuff. It was just, it was special.
I was always amazed from the times when I was in the locker room with LeBron, what just how incredible he was at just flipping the switch. He can be going from having a personal conversation and joking around and laughing and all of this, and then suddenly it's time to answer a question to the media, and just immediately, boom, turn it on and give concise, perfect answers every single day and tell you exactly what you want in here. And he gets his message across, and it's just a sign of how often he has been in front of a microphone, how often he's been interacting with media and talking to media. His level of professionalism in that way always blew me away. It was just so impressive the way he was able to navigate those difficult questions, those difficult situations. Like, you were never going to trip up LeBron James. He was always going to say exactly what it was that he wanted to say. Sometimes that meant getting a message across that wasn't quite clear intentionally, but you knew there was always a method behind it. So he absolutely incredible. And I think we got to remember where the Lakers were before LeBron arrived, and begging, praying to the basketball gods that D'Angelo Russell or Brandon Ingram or Lonzo Ball was going to be the guy, and that was going to be the first star that was going to help lead the Lakers out of the muck. And then, you know, LeBron took a chance going to LA with a very young team, and obviously it worked out. He won a championship here, but the Lakers were in a very, very different position before he arrived. All right, let's take a look at this. Lakers collecting, making bigger moves than the Lakers. Welcome, Pete. Love your content analysis and breakdowns from LFR, LFG.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here. I think we could do something really cool with this show, so I'm just really excited. Would love to do some video breakdowns on here from time to time if we can. But yeah, much to talk about, much to discuss, and thank you for the warm welcome.
All right, let's real quick give a shout out to another sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. We'll be right back to get some more of your questions and your comments here. A lot of stuff, obviously, for us to get into.
See the light at the end of the tunnel, finally. When we get to the finish line, I'm excited to relax a little bit this summer, get out of the house, go have some fun. Now that my wife and I live in Colorado, we're by Red Rocks, and so I'm excited to go see some concerts this year. I'm actually very excited to go see the Tedeschi Trucks Band. They're coming to play a two-night set, and I think Derek Trucks is one of the best guitarists in the history of the world. So very, very excited to get out, which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app, and it's really just about how simple the process is. It's so easy to open up the app, look at your map of all the seats, but you can sort by deal, which is my favorite feature, and they rate every single ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 by how good the deal is. So I know if I'm picking from these ones at the top, I'm getting an amazing deal. And as I work further down the list, obviously it might not be as good of a deal, which kind of just simplifies the process for me and helps me know that I'm getting the right ticket for the right price. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball's in full swing. The NBA and NHL playoffs are here. The NFL schedule's coming out soon. And you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. And by the way, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
Look at that. We get a Jason cameo there. I do want to throw this in here. I know we were questioning about Andrew Wiggins and whether or not he was going to be eligible to be traded. My front office show co-host Keith Smith, the knower of all things salary cap related, is obviously watching the show because he texted me and said Andrew Wiggins should indeed be trade eligible should Miami go down that
path. There you go.
So now we know. Hi, team. I want change, but don't trust Palenka. When has he made winning moves in a row? I don't recall him doing so in the past 5 years without Nico. Jovan, one of the things that you've talked about quite a bit is that Rob hasn't made an off-season trade involving players in quite a while, and that this is the time when that needs to change.
Yeah, the last time Rob made a player-related off-season trade was August 2022 with Pat Beverly. So he sat out the last three off-seasons. And, like, you know, we're not talking trading up for acquiring a draft pick or something like that, but actual, like, roster-changing moves. He has not made a trade over the last three off-seasons. I think there will be a trade in some form or fashion. I would, you know, consider signing trade as part of that this summer. But, yeah, I mean, again, it kind of goes back to what we previously discussed of – there has been this half-baked process, in my opinion, with the idea, the ideas with the roster and just sort of the vision for it. And then it's like, well, let's build it at the trade deadline when the prices are lower. But I also think it then has given them some cover where it feels like every exit interview, it's the same talking point. I will give them credit. They did not have it this summer, and clearly there were some bigger changes on the horizon. But the last like three exit interviews prior to this one had been, well, we either were too injured or we remade the roster and we want to see what this group, like we had a nice close of the season. Let's see what this group can do with some more time together. And I feel like that approach has given them some cover time after time, but like the cover's gone. It's you either deliver or you don't. And so I don't think they necessarily have to make a trade, but I would rank the in terms of roster acquisition, like improvements, RFAs first and foremost, and then trade second, and then unrestricted free agents third. So I would hope that they are pursuing one of those first two. And with the RFAs, the most likely way to get them is a sign and trade. So I think they'll break the streak this summer, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think that their priority for several years, frankly, has been this summer. I know that sounds crazy, but I think that since that was prioritized, the sort of hodgepodge that you were talking about earlier, Jovan, of the roster has been, we can't sign anybody for multiple years, or we don't want to waste assets on the end of the LeBron era. We can feel about that however we want. I just think that that's how they viewed it, that, well, okay, this leaves you with a very small list, Trevor, of them guys that you can pick up. And that's part of the reason it did look like, you know, the island of misfit toys, where you just kind of get the guys that you can and do the best that you can with that. Now they have the opportunity to build something cohesive, and I totally get why this listener does not have the trust there.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've been kicking the can down the road. We've talked about the proverbial can for quite a while now, but I think there is going to be a significant shift. And the biggest piece is, as look, Anthony Davis was asking them to get a center for years. Luka had been in LA for 5 minutes and they traded for Mark Williams. And obviously that didn't ultimately work out, but I do have more confidence that with the Luka factor here, they are going to be a lot more aggressive in making something like that happen and being willing to give up future draft capital. Because what you really can't have coming out of the summer is Luka looking around and going, yeah, this isn't it. Because then he's going to start looking ahead to free agency. That's the nightmare scenario for the Lakers here. So they know they've got to make moves. I think they're going to be very aggressive. And I do think that the streak that Jovan's talking about will indeed be broken. And part of that is the lack of depth in the free agent class. We talked about it before we even got to free agency. It's not like, hey, the Lakers have all this cap space and nobody else does. That's not because the Lakers are ahead of everybody else. That's because there's no cap space because nobody spent it on. There's not that many interesting free agents. If there were, more teams would have cap space. So I do agree that it's the RFAs, it's the trade market. Then you're kind of filling in the pieces around that on the free agent market, if you can. Can we sign John Collins and a restricted free agent? Must trade Vando, Dalton, Connect. I like John Collins if Rui is not back in the fold, and we'll see ultimately where that goes. But sure, you can. The question is at what price? And then how do you navigate the whole restricted free agency situation? As far as trading Vando and DK, okay, what are you giving up in order to accomplish that? Because at best, Connect is neutral value. At best, and he's probably not even that. That may be wishful thinking on my part. Vando, we know for sure, guys, is negative value.
I like the John Collins idea. He's one of the things that I think is really beneficial to have is a guy who can shoot from the corner, but also dive cut and catch a lob out of the corner when you've got Luka and Austin, you know, in those spots. And so he also would he's like sort of half forward, half big man in some ways that allows Jovan. We haven't really had a lot of in the way of two big looks that I think Collins would help there. And he also adds to the level of athleticism of the team. So at the right price, I'd be a big fan of that.
I'll take this a step further. I would rather have John Collins than Rui Hachimura. Like outside of 3-point shooting, which Collins is a solid 3-point shooter. He's not Rui, and no one's Rui. I mean, anyone you're replacing Rui with is not Rui, but shot 41% on threes this past season, shot 44% from the corners. But outside of the specific skill of 3-point shooting and maybe the one dribble pull-up, what does Rui do better than John Collins? John Collins is a better defender. He's a better rebounder. He's more athletic. He's a better rim runner and cutter. He plays with more motor than Rui. I think he checks more boxes than Rui. And to Pete's point, it gives you, he's more of a big man. So you can go with that too big look to start, but he's also spacing the floor. But then you could also go with small ball looks where he's the five and he can hold his own in those lineups as well. So I just talked about this today in terms of different guys that the Lakers could get with Collins, Rui, Kuminga, and Tobias Harris being probably the top four power forwards out there. To me, John Collins is easily the number one guy just because he's got the most versatile skill set, and I think he's the best defender, most athletic, best rebounder. So I'm a Collins fan.
Agreed. Yeah, I'd love to see John Collins land with the Lakers. Keith and I in front office have been talking about him for years, ever since he was back with the Atlanta Hawks, saying he's underrated, and that's a guy that I'd love to see there. AM Hoops, hey, I know your channel. Cool stuff, man. Said, what does kicking the can to 2027 look like? It'll be a lot of one-year deals. It'll be a lot of one-year deals and just kind of stopgap type stuff that they'd be looking to add if they decided to kick the can to 2027. The only way I see that, them doing something like that, is because I was told last year, like vehemently, there is no 2027 plan. That's not a thing. That's not what we're doing. The only way I see that is if they heard through the grapevine, Jokic is out and he wants LA. I think that's the only situation I can imagine where they would be like, and that is very far-fetched. I don't expect that to be the way that goes. That's the only way I could see them telling Luka, hey, okay, we're going to do a bunch of one-year deals and we're going to move things down the road a bit, but it's because we're getting that dude.
Even then, like, what is a Jokic Luka team look like? Offensively, they will figure it out, even if Jokic is not the rim runner that you want at the five. Like, I've those two guys are both basketball geniuses. They will figure out the optimal way to play offensively. But the defense, that's and look, I'm as high on Jokic as anybody. And even I'm like, I just don't see the defensive. I think at that point you have to move on from Austin and then you have to fill out the other three spots with like all defense guys. That's where you're at.
Even if you have an optimist take on the Luka Jokic fit, like build a good ass team this year and then you can move Austin you can trade him or something like that, because you're not going to be able to afford Austin at what, $47 million or something like that, and Jokic at what he's going to make and Luka at what he's going to make. So like, no, you've got to build the best team that you can this year. So what kicking the can to 2027 looks like for me is like a lot of rage and anger from my angle of like, that's just not an acceptable outcome. And I want to echo what you said, Trevor. AM Hoops, you got an excellent channel. Keep doing what you're doing.
For sure. I think one of the things that this offseason has particularly revealed, because Rob Pelinka has talked a lot about optionality. It's that true optionality is not just having cap space. True optionality is having players signed to contracts that teams like, that are at a price that teams would want to trade for. You look what OKC did. My God, you couldn't ask for them to do that any better than what they did. They were in a tough spot, needed to clear cap space. Not only did teams take contracts off their books, but they gave them stuff to do it. They picked up 4 second-round picks for Wiggins and Isaiah Joe. And on top of that, they sent them east. They didn't make any of their West opponents any stronger. That could not have played out any better for OKC. True optionality is having players on team-friendly contracts that have value around the NBA, because that that allows you the ability to truly pivot in whatever direction you want. You need cap space. Teams are going to pay you to give you cap space. You want to roll with the team you got? Great. You could do that. You want to flip those guys into a trade for somebody even better? You've got some options there. That's true optionality, not just having cap space.
Heck yeah.
Well, let's go to Matthew the Sicilian with a $50 super. Look at that. Pete shows up and the big money's rolling in, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
Said, I think that this is realistically a multi-year build similar to what the Knicks did. Any expectation that they are contenders for a championship this season is not realistic and could hamper their future. They need to be shrewd and not make panic moves. Jovan, what do you think their appetite for patience is? I think a degree of patience anyway, because they can't come out of this offseason empty-handed, but in terms of being short of a championship contender, is there the leeway to do something like that?
Well, I agree with the premise here in terms of, I think the Knicks are the closest analog for the Lakers in terms of building out their future roster. And you look at what the Knicks did, I mean, their 5 starters all were making 19 plus million, and going into next season, all 5 of them are going to be making 20 plus. 4 of the 5 are going to be making 30 plus. So if the Lakers are going this maybe slightly top heavier approach with Luka and Austin together, there is a way to build a roster like that and acquire the OG and the Bridges and the Hart. But you're doing that on the trade market. You're doing that with shrewd moves. Ideally, you are signing guys to contracts that can be traded this offseason, like, you know, in the future. But I would agree. I think this is probably a 2-year build on the optimistic side. I don't know that they can build a roster this summer that is on par with OKC or San Antonio. But not only, like, I don't think we expect that. I don't know if they could build a roster that can even like beat them. Like, you know, you could see it in them beating them in a series. Personally, I'm pretty skeptical of that. I think even if they brought in like Kessler and Oubre or you know, whatever is like your dream realistic build, I still think they're not on the same tier as OKC or San Antonio, and they still probably lose in like 5 or 6. I think the goal would be bring in those pieces, get closer, and then next summer or next season, that's when you make the final moves, and that's when you put yourself ideally on par with them. So I would agree that this is probably a 2-year build on the short end. The Knicks are the best model to copy, in my opinion, and the Lakers do need to be careful not to panic. Now, I think the delicate balance here is Luka, in 2 consecutive stories, like, it comes out in ESPN, he wants to win a championship yesterday. He wants the A-list center. He wants shooting. The Athletic comes out. He's on the clock, or the Lakers on the clock with him. So those 2 things are not mutually exclusive, but they are a little bit of odds here of like, what's the best path to a championship, and Luka also wanting to contend this season. Because the way you try to contend on paper this season is you do the panic move, you build like the version of the roster that maybe looks like it has some upside but doesn't really, and then you're kind of in this compromised position. The slower build isn't as sexy, isn't as appealing to Luka, but I think that's what they have to ultimately sell him on, because again, I don't know if it's possible to build a true contender this summer based on the current setup with the assets.
Yeah, I think these are wise words. Like, the Knicks are the one team that were a contender that didn't have anybody on a rookie contract, which is usually the cheat code for a lot of the contending teams, is like, oh, we got Wimby making $14 million a year this year, and now we're just so much ahead of the game. This framework, these are very wise words, and this framework is the reason why I want to see a championship on the horizon, Trevor. Like, I want to see it in the not too far distant future. And to Jovan's point, like, I kind of feel bad for Luka. He was right at the doorstep of this with Dallas, and then it kind of, the rug gets pulled out, and then the Lakers, I agree with Matthew's point that, you know, this is, it would be very difficult, and you could probably make some mistakes on the way trying to chase that. And so where are you at, Trevor, on this idea of, like, how close is acceptable at the end of this offseason?
I think you need to make significant progress. I think you need to be able to show Luka, look, you know, essentially since Luka left Dallas, it's been, all right, we're going to try to build a team that mirrors that Dallas team to a degree. We're going to try to give you pieces like that. Have they really made significant progress or any progress towards building out that type of a team? Not really. So you need to be able to show Luka, look, we're on the right path. And more than that, hey, we added this and this this summer, but this is how we are going to put the finishing touches on this roster and add to this. This is why we believe we're going to be able to next summer, because what you don't want is Luka looking around next summer and saying, yeah, I don't know about this long term, guys. And he's a year away from free agency. And then you're having that conversation about, are the Lakers in trade negotiations with Luka Doncic and sending him somewhere else? That's not the position that you want to be in. You need to be able to show him this summer significant progress. It can't be, again, well, hey, we got a great bargain. We got a great guy that we think doesn't really fit perfectly, but look at the price we got him at. Now you need to get the guys that he's going to be rolling with for the long-term future. And it's, you know, Jovan mentioned, he's got to be a bit frustrated. He was there with Dallas.
Crazy.
And then they moved him, and now here he is. And the team that he's on isn't ready to be there quite yet. And he's got to wait until they build it back up to the spot that he was in before. So you have to imagine there's frustration on Luka's part. They've got to be able to show him real progress. They got to be able to say, look, we got you this center. This dude is the guy you're going to be rocking with for the next 4 years or whatever it's going to be. Or this wing player, ideally multiple players where the Lakers can point to and say, these are guys that we think are going to be part of the long-term future with this club. We're building something special, and maybe next summer we just put the finishing touches on it.
Yep.
With new ownership, Alvin said, do you believe we will make better financial decisions to build a better team? It didn't start, in my opinion, I don't know exactly where you guys are at, it didn't start with the Austin Reaves deal. I can tell you that I was not a fan of the total dollar amount for that deal. I'm concerned about that retaining positive value. Obviously, Austin's a great player. I understand the threat of another team getting him, but that deal didn't scream, Jovan, you and I talked about it a little bit, that deal didn't scream team-friendly to me. I talked about this a little bit recently on Lakers Nation, that there's a little bit of a disturbing trend that the Lakers tend to give very player-friendly deals. One of the things that I need to see, and that we're seeing more of the better teams around the NBA do, is they're finding ways to get deals done that are team friendly, or at least protect the team from the event where a player hits and then is able to just walk away and leave the team scrambling again to do something else. So my hope is that the Dodgerification process does involve more team friendly deals where there's more upside for the team. Much easier said than done, but there's a reason why. When we look around the NBA and you look at their cap sheets and you look at the Lakers cap sheet, you see a lot of player options that you don't wind up seeing on other teams. And I think those have really hurt the Lakers, and that kind of stuff, it's got to come to a stop.
I also think with the full picture, or at least a fuller picture of the situation now, I think this pretty clearly played out of, like, the Lakers had an inkling they were going to lose LeBron, or you know, that was the more likely probability here, if not almost certainly. And they were trying to shrewdly negotiate with Austin. They miscalculated the opening offer and went a little bit too low to offend him, to the point where he was basically like, all right, like, based on this is how you value me, I'm going to go out and I'm just going to leave. He gets some interest from some other teams, comes back to the Lakers and is like, you have to match this, otherwise I'm out. And the Lakers are staring down the barrel of, we might lose Austin and LeBron in the same offseason. And maybe at that point they pivot to trying to retain LeBron if Austin ends up walking. But, like, it does seem like in hindsight, that was probably not the way this was going to go. So you could have been in a situation where you lose Austin and LeBron. And I think they did panic to a degree and decided to go over the top of, like, we're not even going to match this offer, we're going to surpass it and make Austin feel like we really want you, and you know, here's the max that we can give you for 4 years. I feel like that's kind of how this played out. And I said it, you know, said it on here when we were discussing it, Trevor. I think they started too low. I think based on already some of the intel that had been out there, he was going to have interest at or near the max. And if he's getting interest in that 40 to 44 million dollar range, if you start at 30, I just think that's disrespectfully low. And I think they should have started it a little bit higher at 35. If you don't offend him from the jump, maybe you are able to negotiate that, you know, that a little bit lower, and you get him at 42 AAV, maybe instead of 46, which like doesn't sound like much, but will be a factor longer term. So I think that's how it played out. That's my read on the situation is like it. They were already looking at LeBron's gone, so we need to keep Austin, but let's try to see if we can negotiate this down. They botched the initial talks, and then they had to make up for that by going over the top to keep him.
I think new ownership's impact on making better financial decisions is actually going to be a little more indirect in them hiring for new positions and building out the infrastructure of the team internally. And so it's less, it's like more about the hiring of Rohan Ramadas than something that you see directly on the roster. I don't think that the type of decisions of player options and the negotiation that you're talking about, Jovan, with Austin, I think that doesn't change a whole lot until you get a different decision maker in the main chair, you know. But in terms of ownership's impact, one of the things that always left an impression on me on my years with the Lakers is how many circumstances where it was one person doing the job of three, Trevor, and you know, just building out sort of the bones and sinew and muscles of the organization. They really need that, and that's my hope, is that Walter can help do that.
Yeah, you know, to be clear, I don't blame Austin Reeves for the contract that he got or anything like that. That's you know, he's certainly deserving of a big pay raise based on what he was getting, and that situation was one where I think the Lakers did find themselves in a spot where they could lose both of them. And as I said a few times, if it came down to doing that deal or losing Austin Reeves, I'm doing that deal. But I agree with you, Jovan, that they maybe should have started a bit higher and could have come to terms on a deal that would have been a bit more team friendly. All right, we'll do. So I get this comment a lot. Crazy take. This one says, I know, I think we should trade Luka. Insane. I know. Okay. I just don't see any realistic path to contending. Why not restack the assets? Wait for San Antonio and OKC's windows to pass. No more stopgaps. To me, guys, I've ranted about this plenty of times in the past. I see this as the opposite of what the Lakers are organizationally as a franchise. Yeah. Pete, where do you fall on this kind of thought process?
So I understand the sentiment, right? That there's sort of this disconnect of timelines, and that we are breaking everything down to its foundation of just Luka and Austin and then trying to build it back up. And by the time we were just talking about like a 2+ year timeline of getting to actual championship contention, which is right when Luka hits free agency. And so I do understand the premise of this question, but ultimately I really agree with you that this would be antithetical to everything the Lakers have ever stood for and continue to stand for. And as Plink has pointed out accurately, this is the hardest piece to get, Jovan, and that if you're starting from Luka, you've got a great head start. And if we are really in the business of winning championships, I think you at least have to give it a shot and really try to build that team first. And then if you got to move him because you didn't get there for what, that would be, I'd be so disappointed in that, but I would understand. But I think you got to go that route first.
I agree. I echo everything you said. I think the timeline, I think, is the interesting thing to me, because it's like Luka's 27, Austin's 28. In theory, that core is actually a little, I mean, they're several years ahead of San Antonio. They're even a bit like, you know, Shea's right there in similar age. I think he's 26, but you know, around that 26, 27 range. And then Chet and J-Dub are a bit younger. Like, they're also ahead of those guys in overall like timeline. So it is interesting that, you know, they might have a 1 to 2 year building process on like the optimistic side, but then on top of that, like those two teams are already strong contenders and are theoretically only going to, you know, either maintain or continue to get even stronger. So that's like, I get the premise and the central tension here, but the Lakers are not trading Luka. I think that, you know, it's just the challenges. You got to find a way to build a contender sooner than later. I don't think this is like a 2030 play, because I at that point, I think you've kind of blown your window.
We've seen 8 different champions in 8 years. I don't think now this is the era to look at OKC or San Antonio and say that mountain simply cannot be scaled. That's not the way I look at this. Guys, we do have a little bit of stuff coming out here from Mark Stein. Mentions that Quentin Grimes has emerged as a Lakers top target. Before we wrap things up here, I want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
I thought he was a fairly likely target of the Lakers. I think he's somebody that both Pelinka and Redick would really look toward. However, he does ping on the Norm Powell, Anfernee Simons meter for me in terms of like not quite being good enough on defense. If he were the main guard off of the bench, I'd really like that. And sort of if he could be the Luke Kennard replacement, I'd be really into that. If he's our starting two next to Austin and Luka, Jovan, I don't think we have enough defense.
I'm lower on Grimes than consensus. I view him as a six-man. Like, I view him as a six-man type. I think there's people that I know a lot of Laker fans, including Luka fans who have the previous experience with him in Dallas, view him as the potential fit between Luka and Austin. I disagree there. I think he's most effective with the ball in his hands, and he's coming off of a down three-point shooting season, though he did shoot 33% overall, 37% on catch and shoot. So it was mostly like you take out the pull-ups and the off-the-dribble threes. I think that's where his efficiency can tank a little bit. But to me, he's more of like a B-ish defender. And I think, in my opinion, the most important thing for that guy who's going to be the spiritual Marcus replacement in the starting group, like that guy needs to be able to defend 1 through 3, if not 1 through 4, and take on, if you need a point of attack guy, that guy can do it. If you need a wing stopper, that guy can do it. It's a tough job, but you need to be able to do both. And I think there are some guys who could do both. Quentin Grimes is not that guy. He is primarily a backcourt guy. He's going to be used. He's 6'4". He's going to be used on point guards and shooting guards. If you need maybe some smaller wings, but if you need him to guard the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum type, like that's just not really in his wheelhouse. I know there's some clips from the series against Boston where he's hounding Brown, but like, I think if he's doing that every single night in a series, like that's just too much of a task for him. So I just view him as like, offensively, great fit, but more of a six-man type. Defensively, not the stopper that they need. I think he's a tier below the level that they need.
I think that's where people get... They view Quentin Grimes as this top-tier defensive player, and that's just not quite where he's at. Who is that guy? I mean, I know Lu Dort is the first name that would pop into my mind. I don't know how available he is. And OKC is probably going to trade him into somebody else's cap space and get like multiple firsts for him at this point.
They're given the way they're the Lakers,
right? Who is that guy then that fits that conceptual between Luka and Austin spiritual Marcus Smart, as you so eloquently put it?
I mean, the thing is, you can swing too far in the other direction, right? If you go the route of a Dort or even a Herb Jones, like these are guys that will struggle on the offensive end and in ways that can really, like I feel like the Lakers haven't hit their ceiling in the Luka era on the offensive end. And part of that is, we're going to cheat off of Marcus Smart and dare you to shoot 10 threes in this game. And maybe you're having one of those games where you hit 6 of them, but you're also going to have those games where you hit 1 of them and can't throw a pee into the ocean. And so I do think that there's a certain level of two-way play that's essential there. I also wonder how much we switch and how much this point of attack defender matters in the first place, where if you get a guy like Lu Dort, but we switch everything, like how often is he really going to be on the ball? Because if I'm on offense, I'm going to be like, I want that guy guarding my best guy. You guys switch. Let's get somebody else onto him and rock and roll. And so scheme plays into this as well. But I do think that there's like, it matters on the offensive end as well. We can't just get that spiritual Marcus replacement and they're bad on the offensive end, because that has effects too.
I think a guy that could be gettable that I would view as an upgrade over Grimes and closer to this is Kelly Oubre, where he's coming off of one of the best shooting seasons of his career. So maybe that was an outlier performance, but he does have that 1 through 3 utility and even can scale up a little bit depending on who the four is and guard some fours. So he's a guy I think can fluctuate between being a point of attack guy and wing stopper, has utility as a cutter, transition threat, high motor guy, solid rebounder for a wing, not like great, but I think above average. And so he's someone that I see having a lot of utility. I'd be interested in PJ Washington or Derek Jones Jr. I just wonder with Dallas, I think optics will matter in any trade with the Lakers. They have to feel like they at least were neutral, if not winning the trade. So I think they're trying to get a first for him. they haven't been able to get it. But I think with the Lakers, it's got to be like, we need the first from the Lakers. We're not selling Washington on a discount. Derrick Jones Jr., Lakers and Clippers rarely make trades, so that's right. A tough one. And then I'm higher on Herb Jones than I think Pete is. I think Pete's a bit lower on him. I think he's someone that could have a PJ Washington-esque leap in going to a winning situation. I think he's played on a bunch of crappy New Orleans teams with no playmaking and playing off of Luka and Austin and just focusing on shooting open threes and playing defense. I think he would be an upgrade over a lot of these options. Then I look at Tari Eason and Peyton Watson as like the RFA guys that Eason's maybe more 2-4, not as much point of attack, but if you could get him at the right price, or obviously Peyton Watson, I would take any of those guys. Otherwise it gets grim. We're talking, you want to take on Christian Brown's contract? Maybe if they throw in first, like you don't. And then it's a bunch of guys who, like Matisse Thybulle, who's, I think, a minimum level player and like not to me a starter. So, yeah, it's tough.
It's slim pickings. I'll tell you what, this is, Lakers fans are going to be cursing restricted free agency if they aren't already by the time this process is over, because the guys that you really want to get all seem to be RFAs. But, you know, Rob Pelinka has got his work cut out for him. LeBron James, no longer a Los Angeles Laker. This team's now going to be built around Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves as the foundation. And in the coming days, perhaps weeks, next season's Lakers are going to be assembled as we see a new era of Lakers basketball. Guys, we'll wrap things up there. Appreciate everybody joining us. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you do hit the subscribe button. Pete, Jovan, next time we talk, we're probably going to have at least a few new Lakers to talk about.
Can't wait.
Very excited.
Yep. And I think we're going to go, Thursday? Either Thursday or Friday we'll go this week. We'll talk and get it all sorted out. But again, everybody hit the subscribe button, turn on those notifications so you make sure that you get notified when we do go live. Appreciate all of you for being here. Till next time. See ya and stay safe.